And now we're having a little bit of difficulty with our Gene Shepherd program as time clicks away. Man, I just copied it onto this drift. If we had a network here that works, this wouldn't be an issue. But no, I've got to put things on the drive and drag it back and forth from room to room. And then it's lost when I get in here. So hang on, let's try a search function and see if that works. Oh, lordy, lord, lord. Well, okay. We may not have a Gene Shepherd episode this morning, or at least not a complete one, the way things are going. Brother. This is WBAI New York. The show is Mass Backwards. We're trying to bring you a fresh, newly digitized product. But you know... Oh, now the computer's crashed. Okay, good. I give up. All right, here it comes, although it's too late. We won't have time to hear the whole goddamn show. And it's a story at the end. Maybe I should just breeze up on ahead a few minutes. From this very day in history, July 15th, 1965, the story of moving pianos. Now let me calculate how much time we've lost. We're going to go ahead about 4 minutes here. All right, well, enjoy. I know I'm not.
And try that one in between his Mr. Clean commercials. Hey, you know, I've heard the rumor that Mr. Clean is really getting a little dirty. That's just a little question I'd like. Have you noticed those chicks every time they show Mr. Clean down on the air there? They're always going, oh, oh, oh. Holy smokes. I don't know any chick that can get that excited over a cleaning fluid. All set, gang? All right, ready to hurl that invective out there? Get that radio up there. Oh, it's going to be number two. Gonna be number two there. That's invective number two in our Series B catalog. For you invective collectors, put your radio up there on top of the windowsill, and when I give you the cue, I'll give you 8 seconds of silence. In which time, I'm giving you the instructions here. You turn your radio up to full blast. There will be silence. And all of a sudden, that invective will hurl itself out all over Trenton, all over Hackensack, up and down the air shafts over in the East 50s. And the instant we have calculated this scientifically, of course, the instant the neighborhood is in a turmoil, you whip your radio back, throw it under your bed, turn on your old bad Dave Brubeck records, and sit back and pretend that you're an innocent Johnny Carson fan, just waiting for the next commercial to come up. All set now, gang? All right, now. At the count of three, turn your radio all the way up. One. Get ready now. Hand on knob. Two. Three. Here we go.
Uniform will be helmet liner, raincoats, and GI shoes, and nothing else. Let's go!
Oh, that'll bring the roses to their cheeks. All right, that clears that. Isn't it good to get a little of your aggressions out, a little rottenness out of your system, a little of the crumminess out of your gut? Sure is good. Get out of here, Chris. You're a Martha Dean expert. Get the heck out of here. I know you're a type.
And now, our guest of the morning.
We got other things to do here. Other striped bass to fry. you know, a couple of nights ago, we were on, Matt, maybe a week or two ago, I did a show about the time I played on the church softball team out in the festering, roistering Midwest, where, believe me, softball is played with all the intensity of true maniacs at work under the lights and the heat. Did you remember that story? And I told about how the softball game at the end of this fourth inning broke up into this fantastic brawl. We were playing the St. Ignatius Immaculate Heart softball team, and I was representing the United Brethren, the true believers and good thinkers crowd, and we fought until they finally called the police. Well, somebody, immediately everybody thought, you know, oh, come on, this is another one of the shepherd's bits, he's made it up. Because out here in the East, things don't happen like that. This is the world of cool people. Seriously, this is the world of the people who do not hurl themselves into things with the same intensity as they do in that great inverted bowl of the Midwest, where the heat somehow generates a kind of human compost heap. It kind of generates a sort of fermentation. Has it ever occurred to you, you know, that the heat will not only ferment all kinds of stuff you find in the alley, in old half-empty beer cans and stuff, it can also ferment the soul. And we don't get much of it here. Listen to this one. Springfield, Ohio. Some guy sent me this clipping. Springfield, Ohio. The Clark County Sheriff's Office sent several deputies Tuesday night to break up a bat swing and free-for-all between two softball teams. One man is in the hospital with a possible concussion, and two other players were treated at the hospital. One was released while the other was retained. Deputies said the fight started over an umpire's decision during the game between teams from the Lutheran Intermission and the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. Well, I remember one time sliding into third base, Matt. I don't know what there was. There's a kind of a madness that takes over men when they're playing games, far more so than when you're doing stuff which is serious or you think is serious. And there's a madness that comes over you cannot control. And I am sliding into third base. And there was this little wiry, raunchy, pasty-faced sort of buck-toothed third baseman who played for this team called the Immaculate Conception Team. The funny, I don't know. So I come sliding in, and he's looking at me. He's got a kind of an evil blue eye, and the ball is coming in from center field, and I'm coming from second base, barreling in. And he grabs the ball about head high, a little bit higher. He grabs the ball head high, brings it down, and clips me right on the cheekbone with it, his tag, and a kind of cloong like that in the eye. Well, immediately, I let my spikes go out from my knee, and I catch him on the left kneecap with both of them, swinging free. Well, 10 seconds later, the Immaculate Conception Ball Club was involved with the United Brethren in a theological argument that, as far as I know, is still going on. And he called me something that anybody who is involved with, well, all I got to say is interesting phrase coming up. But nevertheless, while we're on this, oh, now you got it. Oh, well, it's sure. It's obvious to Steve Allen. But this is WOR AM and FM New York. And speaking of the obvious, please hit the button there, Dad. There.
Miller High Life in Poppin' Four Cans. Distinctive Miller High Life in Poppin' Pour cans. Just Poppin' Pour Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer, no opener needed. And inside every can, enjoy the hearty yet light goodness of Miller High Life, brewed from a century-old recipe, only in Milwaukee. Miller High Life always gives you that perfect taste in beer every time. Always a bright, clear taste, unequaled, unquestioned, unchanging. Now you can enjoy refreshing Miller High Life in Pop and Pour cans. Pop and Pour Miller High Life. Always sparkling, flavorful, distinctive. Now in Pop and Pour cans.
Oh, man. Hey, Lee, baby. I will award the brass pickle. Chris in the next room reminded me of something just fantastic. I will award the brass figurine with bronze oak leaf palm to any ex-GI who remembers what they used to call the medical officer in many units. What he was called, it was two words. And I don't know whether I should even tell you. It's a very simple phrase, but I will award you the brass figurine if you can remember what they called the medical officer. Did you know what they call them? Oh, you didn't. That's the new army. They do things like that. Huh? Well, it's a funny thing. The heat. I'm a great heat fan. I don't suppose it's any secret. But whenever the summer really starts summering, whenever it really starts belting it down and it starts laying the heat down on Sixth Avenue, you can see the little wiggly waves coming up off the tar. And you can hear the muffled curses of the cab drivers for blocks around. You can hear the sound of cantaloupes slowly going to rot in the various fruit stands. And fist fights are breaking out on Greenwich Avenue. This is the time when I believe New York truly becomes, genuinely becomes, a summer fist fight. I enjoy it. To me, this is the great time in New York. And today, I've been debating about telling the story about heat and feckless activities I have involved in the midst of fantastic heat in the past. Unbelievable heat, which is the kind of heat they often have in warehouses, for example, in the Midwest. Ever tell you about the time I'm in a warehouse in the Army, Matt? They sent seven of us on detail to this warehouse, and we're unloading flour, barrels of flour, in this warehouse. The temperature is 400 degrees in the warehouse, and we're unloading flour from flat cars. They have drawn flat cars up next to this warehouse, and we are unloading this flour, and we're dressed, you know, just in fatigue bottoms. We've got the fatigue hats on, and we're sweating, and the corporal has wandered off to the PX, and he's left us six guys. He's, all right, you guys, have this thing unloaded by four. I'll be back by then, okay? All right, get on a stick. Well, we're just unloading the barrels one after the other, and we're working like mad because we figure if we can get through by 3 o'clock, we can goof off for an hour. And when he gets back at 4, you know, we're all sitting around eating powerhouse candy bars and having a great time. So we're working like insane idiot maniacs unloading this freight car, just sweating. One guy practically passed out from the heat, but we had this big goal. We're going to have 1 hour off where we can just goof off. The corporal will come back at 4. We're sweating. We broke all National League and American League, possibly all classified records for car unloading under stress and strain, particularly concerned with barrels of flour. So we're sweating. Blah, blah. Gasser is loading it out. He's the big tall guy, and he pushes it down to one guy. He pushes it to me, and I push it over to Martin, and Martin pushes it back to Edwards, and to find it goes out on the platform. Well, I'll tell you, we unloaded that flat car in, I would say, less than 45 minutes. The temperature is 175 degrees in this boxcar. We unloaded it in about 75 minutes, 45 minutes or something like that. And we've got at least an hour and 10 minutes. Just at least. We're all saying, oh, wowie, oh, come on. Hey, come here, Gasser, watch now. Let's play a little catch. We start throwing the fatigue hats back and forth, and the chickens are gambling out next to the boxcar. You never saw anything like a bunch of grown-up GIs when they've got an extra hour. You know, the kids yelling, hey, watch this one. Hey, Edwards, watch. You kick your fatigue hat, and he catches it and throwing it back, and somebody goes down to the PX and comes back with a powerhouse candy bars, when suddenly, at 3:05, a sergeant appears. And he says, what are you guys doing? Somebody says, well, we're unloading the car here. He says, great, now let's start on the next one. And as far as I know, there are four guys still unloading cars out in the Midwest someplace. You know, speaking of heat, though, today I'm going along 6th Avenue. And, along 6th Avenue in the 40s, there are a lot of crummy, rotten used magazine joints. Have you ever seen those joints along there? And in the window, they have all these things like old photo play magazines, and they have True Story magazine for 1936, that rare May issue. They have Popular Mechanics of 1928. They have all the stuff in the window. And, of course, in the back, they have what they call our exotica. And you can see crowds of pimply-faced people sneaking in and out, you know, with their hats over their faces so nobody sees them. They're going back to look at this stuff. And this atmosphere, this whole atmosphere of the used junk, the dusty, musty atmosphere of the scavengers of the world is rarely reported on. I never hear anybody doing a short story or talking about this side of mankind, the people who lived amid dusty fern pots, the people who live in the world of old used radios and junk like that. Well, hey, what's going on in there tonight? Here, give me the phone here. I don't know what, there's a big party going on there. Hey, Lee, come on. What's going on? You're sorry, but tell me what it is, and then we'll go on with the show here. All right. Hello there. That's all. We get this all straightened away here. Yeah. I can't hear you, baby. Hello? I didn't say that. I see. All right. Now, let's get back to the show. Let's not talk about her for the rest of it. She's going to tell the Pope. Wow. Well, that's going to be trouble. Well, nevertheless, I'm... silly, whoopee people. Nevertheless, you know, I'm walking along, and the sun is beating down. Oh, man. And today, and I smell the smell of old used magazines. That's a special smell. I have never seen anybody describe this in short stories or in any kind of fiction. It's one of those things that we all know. Old, used Herald Tribunes from like 2 years ago. You know that peculiar old paper, dusty, the smell of a large number of mice who have been there and gone, and water has drifted down into it, and it's kind of yellow. You know that funny, that smell of old used things. And I'm walking past it in the heat, and I smell this smell, and it hits me. Holy smokes. And there's a faint sense of fear, and a kind of a, not only fear, but an immense, unbelievable tiredness hit me. Just for an instant, maybe it lasted about 10 seconds. You know, sense memory is something you can't really ignore. You know what is it? Sense memory. You know what sense memory is? Oh, it's funny, interesting, Matt. Sense memory is a thing that Stanislavski talked about a great deal in his book, An Actor Prepares. Now, an actor prepares in the Stanislavski method by attempting to bring up actual emotions and feelings that he had years ago. Actually, not trying to remember them, but recreate them and start them all over again to use in a scene where this same emotion is important. And so you'll see an actor on a stage in the Stanislavski method where he's supposed to feel kind of sick to the stomach or something, you know. And he really does feel sick to the stomach because he's using something that happened when he was a kid. And he remembers it, and all of a sudden he's eating an old rotten peach or something. You know, he's walking around the stage. And this is sense memory, and we all have it. Now, some people can use it. Other people can't use it. But we all have it. We all have had a fantastic number of emotions and little fugitive things that have happened to us, smells and sights and sicknesses. They're all stored away. And all you need is the proper cue, the proper catalyst to all of a sudden you feel it. Have you ever walked down the street and suddenly you say, it's something familiar about this. Gee, I know what's going to happen next. Or you say, I've seen this before. Or, holy smokes, I know what that guy's going to say. I've been here before. I know he's going to come in the door. Here comes Mabel. Well, that is, in a partial sense, the sense memory that I'm talking about. Well, old Shep is walking along 6th Avenue in the 40s today, see, and I'm minding my own business. I walk past the newsstand there, and I look in the H&H there. I come in, I get myself some iced tea. I'm a great, you know, I go in the H&H all the time. And you know where they have these empty glasses filled with ice water with the little lemon thing, and you're supposed to fill it up with it. You ought to see the little old ladies sneak in there. You ever seen them do that? The little old cheapy ladies. And the bums, they'll sneak in and they'll get that empty glass with the ice cubes in it with the lemon, see? And you're supposed to put in the dime and the two nickels, rather, and get out the iced tea, you know, fill it up. They take the glass real surreptitiously, and they sneak away, and they'll sit down, and they'll squeeze the little piece of lemon into the ice cubes. They squeeze it in. Then they go back and get ice water. Then they put sugar in. They got themselves a big glass of lemonade. They sit there and knock it down. Well, there's a lot of ways to live in this town, I'll tell you. So I'm watching this scene there for a while, and... Well, I know them all, boy. I was out of work for 1 year in this town, and I know how to live in this town. And I lived for over 6 months, Matt, really, on free soda water, free seltzer water that you get out of Hector's. I used to come in there, wrap my mouth around the spigot, you know, and turn it off, walk away, eat a half a pound of piccalilli on the way out, you know, a little mustard. And I did pretty good. Well, I know how to live. So I'm walking. Well, what's the matter, man? Have you ever wondered why I've got this warty complexion? Well, I didn't get that just thinking bad thoughts or smoking before I was old enough, you know. I'm walking along 6th Avenue tonight, and it's heat. Oh, it's hot. Oh, it's like, you know, it's 90 degrees. And I get in the 40s, and I'm, what's that? I smell old, used, rotten stuff. I smell the dust. I could smell that sort of musty, cruddy, ratty smell of old yellowed magazines and torn covers of 20-year-old papers. And I see the scurrying figures of people who hang around that kind of thing. They got their pants are usually always a little too long. And they fold down over their shoes, you know, and they're kind of worn at the back. And they wear brown shoes all the time with black pants. That sort of dark brown, yellowish kind of shoe, you know, that indefinable kind of shoe that you see in pictures, ads of the 1920s. And they have funny striped shirts and little thin blue ties. And they usually wear brown coats, heavy woolen brown type double-breasted suit coats with non-matching pants. You know, the kind they're always scurrying in, and they got these gray fedoras, and they're going in and out of these used, crummy joints. I smell that. And it hit me. Oh, wow. Boy, did it hit me. All of a sudden, I could feel myself toiling up an endless, long, narrow, black, dark, rock-lined passage. Toiling. The fires of hell. The ancient heats of old burnt-out volcanoes. The dust swirling down past me. And on my back, between my shoulder blades, is an immense, a load beyond all human comprehension. And I can smell the smell of dust and old torn magazines and Captain Billy's whiz-bang of 45 years ago, old Popular Mechanics, and I'm toiling up through the endless darkness. And ahead of me is a little yellow light bulb that is at least 4 miles in the distance. Woo! Oh, holy smokes. I'll tell you, I got out of the 40s so fast. I ran down to this cool chromium-plated bar where they had the air conditioning, and it was all dark and shiny. And I sat there, and I says, quick. Give me one on the rocks. And he says, one what? I says, quick, give me a knee-high orange on the rocks. You can't escape it. It just came out of me instantly. It was the only thing I could think of under the circumstances. Now, you want to know why I had this fantastic sense memory of the heat and the weight and the smell of old Popular Mechanics of an ancient age? The sight of brown coats that didn't match with blue pants, of scurrying people who live in the world of old, used, rotten, thrown-out things of other people's lives? You know, there's a great number of people who have an insatiable, absolutely unquenchable thirst for other people's lives. This is what drives guys to spend hours looking through garbage cans. It isn't the stuff he finds. So what is he going to do with that old 1926 Popular Mechanics? Somehow the fact that it says Charlie M. Watanabe on it, 1722 Avenue B, you know, somehow he's snitching little pieces of people's lives. And at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, you will see well-dressed guys Really, well-dressed men. I saw a guy the other day, must have been 3 o'clock in the morning, John, really. At least, no later than 3. This guy has a Leica camera on him. I'm talking about a Leica Flex camera. He's got the big one. This is about $600 worth of camera, you know. And he's got a Leica camera. He is neatly and beautifully dressed. He's got a white shirt. He's got those big black rim glasses of a guy who works in an important, very, very official office. And I'm walking along 6th Avenue, way down in the Squanji neighborhood. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and this guy, absolutely with the maniacal, the insane attention of a ferret, digging out a mouse out of a burrow. He is, he's looking in there. He's throwing old apple cores and potato peelings out, and he's looking hungrily through this garbage can. Well, I figure, you know, the poor guy's lost a shirt stud, you know, they're throwing it out or something like that. No, I see him, he's in the light, you know, he's looking at a sack that's got what looks like old cigar butts hanging out of it, you know, and fur and all kinds of little claws sticking out of it. He's looking at it to see what it is. I see who it is. And he sticks it in his pocket of his double-breasted Brooks Brothers suit, and then he scurries on to the next garbage can. He's looking away. Well, that's a special kind of man. Let me tell you, one time I'm a kid. I'm just a kid, see, and I'm 14 years old, and I have just turned 14. It is exactly 6,942 years ago this month. You see, it was the 14th birthday, and it's July, and oh boy, is it hot. Stinky, rotten, crummy, hot day, and all these kids around me, there was about, 8, Bolas and Schwartz and Flick, all of us, we're all about the same age. And incidentally, I was the youngest, maybe by maybe 3 or 4 months. And so all the rest are already 14. And now I turned 14. And Bolas, who was the sharp kid in the crowd, the hard-hitting, tough little guy, you know, he's always on top of the scene. Bolas, one day, we're all of a sudden just 14. He says, let's go down and get our working permits. Working permits? You know, what is a working permit? Well, 20 minutes later, I am sitting in an office in this high school. Have you ever been in a high school in summertime when you're not going to school? There's a certain peculiar, hard-to-define atmosphere about that, too, which has not been much reported on the, you know, this is the, all of our own life experiences. And I'm going, and incidentally, it is a foreign high school, foreign to the one that I am attending. You see, it's so it's really foreign ground. This is the tech, you know, the manual arts type high school, which we always kind of vaguely look down on. You know, the klutzes go to learn how to grind valves and that kind of stuff. See, so I am at Tech High School with Schwartz, Flick, Bolas, and the whole crowd, and we're standing outside of this office where they are giving kids work permits, and one by one they call us in. And so now I'm sitting opposite this guy in a blue suit, and he's a teacher at this school. And he's just like, give me your name, please. And he, June Shepard, I see. How old are you? 14. Well, may I see your birth certificate, please? Well, of course, I'm all prepared. I got my birth certificate. I give it to him. And I'm feeling very official. He says, okay, let me see. All right. What does your father do? So he hangs around. Oh, okay. Father hangs around. All right. Your mother alive? Yes, my mother's alive. Uh-huh. Yeah, any brothers and sisters? Uh-huh. Do you have any special skills? Special skills? Well, I got a hand break. Pretty good at throwing from the outfield. I can sing pretty good. I sing in the Greek Glee Club. You know, I sing alto. He sings alto. Excellent peg from outfield. Mm-hmm. I see. All right. Would you give this to the girl on your way out? Now, give it to the girl there. Hurry up. All right, next. Let's go, next. And 5 minutes later, I have this little thing that says, Gene Shepard, 14, is hereby allowed to work under the state laws of labor of Indiana. I got my working permit. Now, just outside of the room where they had the working permit, they had a guy who sat at a desk and sent you out to jobs. You know this thing, they look through the little, have you ever been out, sent out for by the state employment agency for a job? Well, they gathered all of us, me, Schwartz, Flick, Brunner, one little knot, and the guy says, all right. He says, all of you kids, go to this number. He says, take this and go to this number. He says, and ask for Mr. Scott. Mr. Scott is expecting you. All of us have got this offer of a job, and 20 minutes later, we were riding our bikes through town, you know, and up and down the streets, and we're to Mr. Scott's furniture. And we arrive in front of a place that looked exactly like these joints on 6th Avenue, where they sell the used magazines, the Whoopi magazines, you know, and all that jazz, except for one thing. He is a three-story establishment. On the ground floor, he has a large collection of old used Captain Billy's whiz-bangs. He's got a tremendous collection of 45-year-old popular mechanics and so on. But on the top floor, which was 7,000 feet above the first floor, he has a whole floor full of used, ancient, dust-covered with those little rings that you get from beer glasses, smoky, rotten, split, rusty, peeling, flaked pianos. You got the scene? He must have had like 297 pianos. And Mr. Scott looked a little like Sidney Greenstreet, if Sidney Greenstreet had never made it. He wore blue work shirts, and he had four cigars sticking out of his mouth, little short stubs. He kept four of them going all at once. And he had on the top of his head a straw hat that was turned up all the way around, you know, like the kind that Greenstreet wore, the Panama hat. He had seven chins, and incidentally, he had a couple of cigars sticking out of those chins. And he wore these big tennis shoes. And it was Mr. Scott's used furniture company. And Mr. Scott says, "All right, you kids. All right. How many of you are you?" He says, "Okay, what's your name?" He's sitting at his desk, roll-top desk, and he's taking each kid's names. He says, "Now, let's see, your name is Schwartz, Paul Schwartz, 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 Paul Schwartz, Gene Shepard, Gene Shepard, and Flick, Jack Flickinger, all right, Flick, all right, Bolek Rakowski, yeah, Bolek Rakowski, don't bring no cabbage around here, kid, Bolek Rakowski, all right, Geza Nemeth, oh, in your turum yashik tanamala." He hollers a little Hungarian at him, "Geza Nemeth." And we're all standing there watching this guy at work. It was our first job. He says, "Let me see your work permits." So we throw him out the work permits. He says, "All right. Okay. Hey, Stosh! Hey, Stosh! Hey, Stosh! The kids are here, yeah! Okay." Stosh suddenly sticks his head up through the door amid a whole pile of Captain Billy whiz-bangs. He's down under the floor in the basement. His head comes up, and here is this tall, thin, gnarled guy who looked a little like Slim Somerville. You ever seen Slim Somerville? He had big bulbs hanging down from his eyes, had big ping pong balls under his ears, you know, kind of drooping like he was melting. He sticks his head out and he sort of drifts out of the dust and the darkness of this dungeon. And he says, "Okay, you guys, come on, let's go. Come on, let's go. All right, follow me up the stairs here." We go up the stairs. Us, the little tiny band of 14-year-old kids who, not more than 10 minutes before this, are living in that wonderful, innocent world where we thought if you had a tough job, it was like getting a half a peck of potatoes from the store for your mother. Well, our idea of a really tough job is mowing the lawn. And that's really rotten stuff if your old man makes you mow the lawn on a hot day. We are standing amid the pianos. There must have been six of us. And this guy named Stosh says, "All right, now, what you gotta do, we're moving the pianos from here down to the basement." "What? We're moving the pianos from here down to the basement?" There's a long flight of stairs that went up, a narrow flight of stairs, and it went down and curved down into the basement. And down in the basement, it was like the black hole of Calcutta. It was like 10,000 degrees in this basement. You could hear the rats squeak. Everywhere you looked, you could smell the must of the basement and pipes banging. And we started to move pianos. I am in the front of the piano, and Flick is on the back of the piano, and Bolas is trying to hold it down. And the piano is going down the stairs. Hold on to it! Help! Help us come! Well, we moved one piano. It must have taken us 45 minutes to get just one piano down to the first floor. We arrived at the first floor, and Mr. Scott is sitting at his desk. Scott's saying,
Look, that's only one piano. You guys have been here for about an hour. It's going to take you guys at least 7 weeks to get two pianos down. Now get on a stick, will you? Hey, Stosh, get these kids on a stick. Tell them to quit fooling around. Now get going.
We received 10 cents an hour. Well, we move the piano from the first floor, finally, after another 45 minutes of insane struggling, down into the basement, back near this furnace, and we lay up against the side of the wall. We're so hot, all you can smell is old rotten magazines and dirty rats. You can smell Stosh and Mr. Scott. And we're insane with thirst. They had one little faucet. Have you ever been in these joints? They don't have things like, you know, little ice-cold water fountains that you step on. They had one little faucet that came out of the wall, and you turn it on, it would go... It would drop three drops every 4 minutes of a rusty, viscous liquid. And so I'm down there. Have you ever sucked a pipe? And you got nothing but bubbles and pieces of rust. And then Schwartz has hit me. Come on, I'm thirsty, quick! Oh, boy, are we going out of our skull with thirst. We are hot. Stosh is yelling at us. And Scott is saying, get on the stick. We go back up to the top now. We've each got about 7 micro drops of water in this rusty water. And we start moving the next one down. The heat now is 500 degrees. It's like, you know, have you ever read Camus, The Myth of Sisyphus? That is no myth. Listen, I have pushed rocks myself upstairs and downstairs, and I know there ain't no winning. There is no winning. There is no winning at all. So we're moving this thing down. We're getting better at it now. See, we learned that the way you keep the piano from rolling down is to let your foot get crushed under it. That way, you can do it faster. So I'm running and struggling with my foot crushed. We finally get it down to the first floor, and Scott says, all right, you kids. Okay, hold it now. Hold it now. It's time for a break. How would all you kids like a Coke? A Coke? Gee whiz, Mr. Scott, you know. And Flick is crying. Oh, have you ever noticed that the crueler a person is to you, the rottener he is, the slightest sign of humanity on the part of a total tyrant is greeted with giant cries, giant whoopies. You want to grab hold of his knee and hold him and cry and say, oh, what a wonderful person. Gee whiz, well, I'll never forget, you know, that I saw one of our announcers crying for over a week and a half here because Mr. Leader said hello to him in front of Dunhall's down here. It was just a wonderful sight to see. And so I am standing there, and Flick and Schwartz and Bruner and all of us says, oh, boy, a Coke, yeah, that'd be kind of nice, Mr. Scott. And so Mr. Scott then says, well, he says, okay. He says, listen, the machine is next door. He says, that'll be a nickel apiece. 5 cents each. This was back in the days when Cokes were a nickel, believe it or not. We all shelled out I was glad to shell it out. I reached into my pocket. I had like 12 cents in my pocket. I gave that nickel boy like I was dying of thirst. And so immediately Stosh goes out and brings back 6 Cokes. Each one of us paid, you know, a nickel apiece. Drinking a Coke. And back we go and start again. Well, do you know, by the end of that day, I drank 3 Cokes. Figure it out. At 10 cents an hour, I made roughly 20 cents on the entire day. My back was bent over, and I could smell the smell of used old magazines. I could smell the heat. And these people sitting around with their old straw hats. It's that world of the used things. It's that world of ancient things. That world of intense, terrible. It's all right, hon, I know what time. Intense, terrible, terrible, awful, awful work. Backbreaking work that leads to nowhere. Taking the pianos from the top floor to the bottom floor. All day long in that long, winding, narrow passageway, with the grinding heat and the smell of old boards, the smell of old staircase. And we get down on the bottom, finally, and it's now 6 o'clock and Scott closes up. You know, some of these places never close up. Some people's work never stops. It just goes on and on. Like mine, for example. I have to sell you Peugeots now. For those of you who are looking for an automobile that will carry you in fantastic comfort, cool, beautiful, with soft seats,
hot and cold running cokes that come out of the dashboard, and no Mr. Scott to ride herd on you, with a great big sliding roof panel that lets the sun in. There are no rats, no used Captain Billy's whiz bangs anywhere in sight. It's the French Peugeot. Ah, what a chariot of unbelievable luxury. You can see the 2 East 46th Street. It's a high rent district. It's a low price car. And we got downstairs and stood there for a minute, and Mr. Scott says, well, I'll see all of you kids tomorrow at 7 o'clock, okay? We went out into the gathering dusk and got on our bicycles and never went within two blocks of Scott's used furniture again. For years, I'm driving down the street and I see that dusty storefront. It says used magazines, used musical instruments, used pianos. And I see that great big fat man sitting in there with his straw hat, and I see a couple of little scurrying figures pushing things around. And I think, oh, wow. Everywhere one looks, everywhere the back-breaking toil of human beings struggling just for another Coke, just for another whiff of old, ancient Life and Judge magazines. How many of you know the smell of last century's National Geographic? Hey, it's a special world, the grubbers.
This is WBOR.
Oh, no, it's WBAI New York. That was Gene Shepherd from This Day in History, 43 years ago, July 15th of 1965. And that's it for this morning. On Sunday, the Golden Age of Radio, we're going to feature a World War II program called The Doctor Fights with Gregory Peck. We've got an episode of Mr. and Mrs. North, our weekly episode of Escape, and more. So tune in at 7 p.m. on Sunday night for the Golden Age of Radio. And, of course, I'll be back here next week in this same time with another episode of Mass Backwards. So be sure to join us then.